Welcome to another edition of Geopolitics and Empire. A reminder again to support the broadcast, this Guerrilla transmission. You can become a paid subscriber on Substack, $5 a month, buy me some coffee, or send humanitarian aid via DonorBox. We're joined today by Dr. Joe Lee, who's the founder of LASIK Eye Center. He's performed over 70,000 LASIK cases over the past 17 years and has the cleanest record for any LASIK doctor in California who has performed a similar number of cases. He's been outspoken regarding COVID-1984, as I like to call it, from the very beginning. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Lee.
Good morning. Thank you.
Before touching on some of these topics, anything, you know, to add about your background that's relevant for us?
Well, I'm a board certified ophthalmologist. I did a fellowship in refractive surgery at USC Doheny. My mentor who trained me is the director of ophthalmology at Johns Hopkins, Dr. Peter McDonnell. And I've kept him apprised of what I've been doing. The very first call I had with him, he was shocked, yes. So that's a pretty good intro. My whole life, I've tried to be fair. And to achieve a record of over 75,000 LASIK cases since 1998, since I opened up my three offices, I had three offices as soon as I finished my fellowship. From that point to now, 2000 to 2024, I haven't had a LASIK claim, lawsuit, or settlement, and no one on earth has that record. So that comes from being a pretty good problem solver, but that also comes from trying to be fair to my patients, trying to treat them like I would treat my family. Yes.
I mean, that speaks to your level of professionalism, and I've looked into LASIK as well. I'm not a candidate because I am too blind,
I would disagree with that, only because I have a lot of Asian patients that are up to minus 12. So my brother's wife was minus 9, and I did LASIK for her. So if you were told that you couldn't have LASIK by an optometrist, I wouldn't believe that.
I'll have to get a second opinion, but your Twitter X account, I found you a couple years back. I kind of look at the landscape of all the people chiming in regarding what's been going on, and you've had strong opinions. And what's sort of your take with COVID, what happened, the vaccines, and so forth?
When news first broke about this scary virus in Wuhan, and I heard rumblings about it in December 2019, I had a couple of friends who were really gung-ho, and they were the rugged individual kind of guys. And we bought masks. We bought these $700 masks that had the crazy filters, the two little round things like Darth Vader, and put it on for 30 seconds and realized, I'm never going to wear it. And even if I somehow am able to wear that thing for 4 years, my loved ones wouldn't be able to do that. And so what was the point of it? I started thinking about it. And in January 2020, I found a lot of the answers that very first month. Because I kind of asked myself, look, everyone's fascinated because there's no topic on earth that everyone was more invested in than COVID in the past 4 years. And when I started thinking about this, I was on the phone with a friend who's an ophthalmologist. And I asked myself questions. And he was on the phone and I was asking him, but I was asking myself. I said, okay, I'm going to pretend to be a lung cell. Okay, let's say I get infected with a rhinovirus or, nasal mucosa or something. I am infected with a virus. The virus can enter my cell. The virus can replicate. It can leave my cell. And then it can infect other cells. And I know all this because I feel a sore throat, and you can't feel a sore throat unless at least 10,000 cells are infected and are a little bit sick. But then in 3 days, I'm fine. Now, that process where the virus infects a cell, replicates, infects another cell, that's one cycle. Why would that ever stop? I said, why would that ever stop? But it does. Now, so that was, to me, the biggest clue on earth. It stops. Sometimes it stops in 3 days for me. So I excluded antibodies right then. To me, that was impossible for an antibody to be involved. So from there, I said, okay, I'm going to pretend to be a cell. The virus injects its RNA into me. That is the enemy. What should I do with it? Ask any third grader what you should do with the enemy. Destroy it. Okay, so destroy it. What else should you do? Well, whatever that enemy wants to do, don't accidentally help it. So what does the enemy want to do? That RNA, viral RNA wants to become protein. So what should you do? Not help it. Don't give it resources to make it become from RNA to go to protein. Don't provide a lot of resources. Don't eat a lot. Third thing. Once you figure out how to fight the enemy, wouldn't it be nice for you to let the friendlies, your allies, the other cells in your body know how to fight this? So the way to fight it is destroy it. Simple. And not accidentally help it by growing protein. So now I went back to my room, got on the computer. Within 5 minutes, I had all the answers. Okay. How does this viral RNA get destroyed? What destroys RNA? There's an enzyme called ribonuclease, RNase. It's a ubiquitous enzyme. It's everywhere. Okay. There is no other enzyme on Earth that is known to destroy RNA as efficiently as the RNase. So why wouldn't the RNase be the reason why we were able to destroy the viral RNA within our lung cells? So that was huge to me. I found these answers in January of 2020. Okay, so RNAs. And then how do I prevent it from doing what it wants to do? How do I not accidentally help it? I don't eat. And I look around, every sick toddler on Earth, what do? If you have kids, you know. They get fussy and they stop eating. They eat dramatically less. Well, that was huge. I'm like, wow, that is evolutionary. We found the answer. And then the third thing, how does this cell signal other cells that, hey, the way to fight this is to not grow? Interferon is produced by the sick cell, and it lets other cells know, slow down its growth. So all the answers are right there. And then, of course, I fleshed everything out, and I found all sorts of other issues with the vaccine. But right there, I had all the answers. And then the censorship started, of course.
Yeah, you know, in January of 2020, I had been the first to interview Dr. Francis Boyle, the author of the Bioweapons Act. You know, that interview went viral, got us into trouble. And, you know, his opinion was that it was a offensive biological warfare weapon, you know, before getting into like the other bioweapon that is the vaccine. What's your take on, you know, COVID? Was it out of a lab? Is it some sort of other, you know, trick being pulled on us? What's your take on, quote, you know, COVID?
Well, I've got a lot of theories. I've got conspiracy theories. I've got lots of ideas on that. But, you know, as an average person, if an average scientist hears conspiracy theories, they don't like it. So what my take on that would be, there are a gazillion coronaviruses everywhere. There are more animals than humans. They don't get vaccines. They get sick. That reservoir of viruses will never be able to take care of. So, I think the RNA, COVID RNA virus, is about 30,000 nucleotides long. If you were to try to make that, very, very difficult. Now, if it's already in nature and you try to weaponize it and make it more deadly, okay, go for it. But why are you working so hard? Because if you want to make it really deadly, let's say 10 kills everyone, you've got Ebola. Why use a coronavirus that's known to cause a cold and a mild sniffle? Coronaviruses or a cause of the common cold? Why use a coronavirus? Why try to weaponize a coronavirus? Why wouldn't you just take Ebola? Steal yourself some of that. If you're an evil genius and you want to depopulate the world, take some Ebola, start spreading it around, please. Oh, because that'll kill everyone. Oh, you want to make it just lethal enough, but not too lethal. Well, then that sounds like your average, your average flu virus. So you're saying that they made that? But the flu virus does the same thing. So did they really make that? And they just finagled it perfectly, and they did trials, and they knew that there would be a 1% death. What? I mean, see, that's why, I mean, from my mind, yeah, do I believe that it probably came from the Wuhan lab? Yes, but did it come from them making it, or did it come from animals that had it? Probably animals that had it. And, you know, to weaponize something like that, you have to ask yourself, what's your goal? You want to kill exactly 0.3% of the population, 0.7%? And how would you be able to know all that? So that's why I don't, you know, a 30,000 nucleotide long RNA virus, if you actually want to make that from scratch, it's virtually impossible. And it would take millions of dollars. But you've got an animal and you give it a coronavirus, and there's going to be some mutations, right? But you could have, you know, I don't know how many mutations in one animal. That's one animal would be like 10 labs trying to make mutations. Why would you actually try? Why wouldn't you just take it from nature? So, you know, when they say they made it and everything, I'm like, I never try to even explain this because it's so ludicrous to me. But a lot of people like the idea because they want somebody to pin the blame on. They want somebody to be the bad guy. Now, you can do bad things with what you find in nature. And so here's my conspiracy theory. China had a weird problem, the CCP. The problem they had was Trump. Trump started a trade war with them. Not only did they have that huge problem, like the world knows right now, China has they over-leveraged. They built too many buildings. They've got one building for every two people in China, including high rises. They went crazy with their building, but they also had a one-child policy from 1985. Now, what's the problem with that? Well, if I'm a farmer and I plant one row of corn, I look at myself in the fall and I think, what the hell were you thinking? Go just plant the whole row, you know, three rows of corn next year, plant more. But when you only plant one child, you don't realize your mistake until 25 years later. And then around 2005, 2007, they're starting to worry, guys, our one-child policy might not have been the smartest thing on earth. We don't have people. So what do they have? They have the worst, I mean, South Korea doesn't have a great demographic either, but China has the worst demographic on earth. They've got 1 billion people, whatever they say they is. They lie about everything, the CCP. Very top heavy, huge elderly population. And they're all broken because if you go visit China and see what they built a tremendous amount on the backs of this elderly group. Now you look at the young people, they don't have any, and they're spoiled. And it's not their fault that they're spoiled, because if you're a one child, you're going to be spoiled. You got, you know, both parents, grandparents on both sides. Everyone is focused on one person, and you're spoiled. And you're not going to want to work. Okay, so they've got this huge labor problem. And now they have this trade war with Trump. Okay, so what do? Can they plant more children? Too late. It takes 30 years to grow people. But can they kill off their elderly? Yes, they can. What kills off elderly to the young? By a ratio of what, 10,000 to 1? Respiratory RNA viruses. They're all known to do that. Even in America, we know this. In medical school, we're taught from the very beginning. Pneumonia is an old man's best friend. People, when you're old, you die of the flu. It's not unusual. Even here, death from flu, 50 to 100,000 a year, every year, annually. Some years 30,000, some years 100,000. It has been with us forever. And respiratory RNA viruses kill off the elderly compared to the young at a really huge ratio. So do I believe that the CCP may have released this COVID virus? Because imagine what happens. You release this virus. You cannot plant new children. It is over. You can go ahead and do it, but it's not going to help you for 25 years. But what can you do that will help you right now? You can kill off your elderly. Because one, they've done their service. They've built the buildings. Their backs are ruined. Their healthcare needs are through the roof. Get rid of them. Do I think the CCP is capable of making that kind of decision? Absolutely. Okay, so, and then let's say this pandemic, this coronavirus, which everyone knows, anyone who's a microbiologist, immunologist in medicine knows that coronaviruses have been with us forever, and they're a huge reason for the common cold. Here's another coronavirus. Okay, so let's say it spreads worldwide. Well, before all sorts of things spread worldwide, well, when we didn't travel, it didn't spread as much. But once we started flying, things were spreading. And once we started traveling and going different places, viruses would spread. It's not a new thing. China had an idea that it might spread. And if it does spread to the U.S., and they're... Now, imagine, when it came to the U.S., kids were having COVID parties. It didn't seem that serious. Why did Fauci want it to be serious? He had his own agenda. It happened to line up with the CCP's agenda. The CCP, what they want? They want the U.S. economy not to be so great because it's the economy, stupid. If the economy is not good, the incumbent may not get reelected. Okay, that's great for them. There's several reasons why having a mild pandemic is great for the CCP, because a pandemic here hurts our economy a little bit. Fauci can order a lockdown, and a lockdown means you can have mail-in ballots. And there's no one on earth better at cheating than the Chinese. Copying, cheating, that is what the CCP does. And so what can they do then? Fauci orders a lockdown. Then they can stuff the ballots. And we know Biden didn't win. He had no one. He had no support. Trump had a ton of support. But how did he actually win? The mail-in ballots. That the this whole, I was just watching America talk about Russia collusion with Trump when he was in office, and I could not believe my ears, because to me, that was a joke. But the CCP collusion with the Democrats, that's what really happened. Our elections here were rigged by the CCP, because this trade war that Trump started with the CCP was ruining China. And it was exposing China. And so, to me, if you're CCP, you're like, hey, we are brilliant. We'll get rid of our sick, healthcare-intensive elderly population. We don't really hurt our young. We affect the world economy in a little bit negative way. We hurt Trump's chance of getting reelected. We now have a lockdown that Fauci can order for us. And now we can actually meddle in U.S. elections, which they always did, but now we can actually rig the, just stuff the mail-in ballots and have Biden win. And Biden will take care of this trade war issue with us, because the Democrats have always gotten along with us, and we were always able to pay somebody off so that our trade issues went away. Now, I'm an immigrant. I voted for Bill Clinton when I was young, when I was in medical school. That was when I was dumb and stupid. And as I learned more about life, I'm like, oh, I never agreed. I mean, I'm South Korean. I'm not racist against Chinese, but I never agreed with the concept of taking a healthy company here, replicating that factory in China, and thinking everything would be okay. They're going to just steal your secrets. And then they're going to open up a warehouse right next to it. They're going to replicate everything. And then they're going to not provide good labor employees to your factory, and then you're going to start buying from their factory, and now they control everything. And so, I understand enough about manufacturing and I understand enough about processes. No, you learn a lot from actually doing stuff. And if you don't do the stuff, you're going to lose it and you're not going to know how it gets done. And so, not, you know, to me, America, who sold out America were the CFOs. The CFOs, because they're like, okay, we're going to be able to show less expenses, more profit. We're going to be able to make, get bigger bonuses for us by taking our company A, replicating it in China, outsourcing all the labor there. No, it's not good for the long term of that company A. It is good for the CFO. It is good for the board. But it's not good for America. And it's not good for that the longevity of that company. But that's what happened. To me, that's what happened. And I was against it the whole time. But I was a Democrat until, you know, until the Trump election. I really started to not like Hillary. Hillary was one of my favorite people on earth. And then I start to really not like her. And then, you know, when she said those words, basket of deplorables, I'm thinking, Hillary, just because you went to Harvard, I mean, you think you're all that, and you're going to call half of America stupid. She lost that election by those words. And it was her fault. But that was the truth. That's how she really felt. And that's how the Democrats were. And now, you know, I can go on forever about this. So you're going to have to, you know.
This brings us then to the next issue, which is the, as I call it, the Pentagon juice, the gene therapy, whatever one wants to call these injections. And so you've talked a lot about that as well. I've had guests on that have brought up some of these ideas that you have as well. So then what's your take then on the COVID vaccines?
Okay, so the vaccine, so I realized that the antibody couldn't be useful for us January 2020. I fleshed out those arguments. And then, see, this is, our lung is an air, a sack of air. Our body is 70% water. Our lung is surrounded by a waterproof jacket that prevents water from filling our lungs. Now, water molecules are super tiny, total of 18 protons in an H2O, oxygen 16, hydrogen 1, 18. That it's also called a Dalton protons. Okay, so the COVID IgG antibody is gargantuan. It has 145,000 protons. It's a really large molecule. It's 8,000 times heavier than a water molecule. It's like you get 8,000 water molecules, glue them together. Now you've got the COVID IgG antibody, which is on the outside of our lung and has to cross this lung barrier to get on the inside. And the inside is where the lung cells are being infected. So I figured out a lot, but when I discovered this, I knew it was catchy. I thought about it a million ways. I finally told my mentor, called up the director of Opto at Johns Hopkins, Dr. Peter McDonald. He had trained me in refractive surgery in 1998 at USC Doheny. And when I discussed it with him, he was silent for 20 minutes. He couldn't believe it. He goes, Joe, you're going to go to Stockholm. You're going to want to know about price for this. And I didn't even know what to think of the whole thing. But we've kept talking we haven't talked for like 8 or 9 months, but we were talking on and off for 3 years. And he was shocked. And all my course, now once he gave me that affirmation, because he's been in academic research forever. He's the chief editor of Ophthalmology Times. There's not an ophthalmologist on earth that doesn't know who he is. And he had my back. So I felt like, okay, I'm not being stupid about this. I mean, I'm going to tell Fauci. So I sent a letter, a one-page letter, to every member of Congress. And I sent it in so many different ways that Fauci had to respond. So he had Dr. Emily Rebelting, who's one level below him at the NIH, Director of Infectious Disease at the NIH. She still is there right now. And she emailed me back and responded. That wasn't when I informed them. That was in September 2020. But her response basically was proof that Fauci got the information that the antibody had no path into the lung. Okay. Now, do I the flu vaccine has the same flaw. And they were in such a hurry, they didn't look for a medicine, because any medicine that you look for, any new medicine, any new drug, has to go through toxicology studies. That can take 5-10 years. Okay. No, vaccines don't have to go through toxicology studies. And then if you model it after the flu vaccine, this is another respiratory RNA virus, it's going to be hard for somebody to have issues with it. So that's why they went this route. As a scientist, it's hard to argue the direction they went, except that the flu vaccine had the same flaw. Now, it has a checkered past, the flu vaccine. You look up on Wikipedia, some years it was 20% effective, some years 80%. It's all over the place. Okay, so why? Why did it not work so well? Their excuse, the scientists that do the flu, you know, research the flu vaccine and made it, produced it, their excuse, the strain changed on us. That's not the reason why it didn't work. But that excuse of why it didn't work stopped everyone from thinking. Me too, I never thought about it. But that's not the reason why it didn't work. The flu vaccine never worked because the antibody never crossed the lung barrier. It never worked. So the COVID vaccine had the same flaw. So now, do I think that they were inherently evil and they were planning this way of controlling humanity and putting genes in it? I don't think so. I don't believe it. Do I think that they all want to make money? Yes, I do. You know, when they say follow the money, they mean follow the money. They don't mean follow the evil man who wants to depopulate and kill everyone. That's not what they mean. They mean follow the money, because greed usurps everything. I mean, no matter how evil somebody wants to be, they would rather have money than be evil. So you got to follow the money. And so this mRNA technology for vaccines, it had been around for a while. And I know this because when I was researching this, they had review papers already on a lot of other papers. That means first you have to do the research. Then you publish all these peer-reviewed papers. Then somebody who's more notable in the group that everyone says, oh, he's worthy of writing a review paper on all this. He'll write the textbook. He'll put the chapter in the textbook. Let's have him write a review paper. And then they write a review paper. All that takes time. So this, you know, RNA technology, Malone says he invented it. He's not an inventor of it. There are a million inventors of it. Because mRNA, everyone knows about it. It's not like one person had the idea. You know, that's not the way ideas work. There were a million people who had it. And all of Robert Malone's patents had already expired. That's how long people had been working on this mRNA technology for vaccines. Okay, so they were waiting. They were waiting for a big pandemic so they could launch it. That's what I think. Because look how simple this is. You launch the mRNA technology, the first mRNA vaccine, with a pandemic. And then what does that enable you to do? Make a lot of money. And then everyone on the end, in understanding this, all the directors at the NIH, FDA, CDC, they all know it's going to go down. They can all make money, not by being paid off by anyone. Not like, oh, here's money under the table for you and for you and for you. We're going to divvy it up. Everyone just does their stock options. And so it looks like everyone's, you know, there isn't collusion, but really, they all know that this is kind of complex and the average citizen would never bet on all this. Some may, but they're going to be the main ones that make the money on this. So I think it was from traditional vaccines to mRNA vaccines, the transition, and then the mRNA technology doesn't just open the door for vaccines. It's a therapeutic. Any imaginable protein that you can possibly make that's a therapeutic, the sky's the limit. So, stock options for everyone. So just follow the money. So to me, when I informed Fauci of this mistake and Dr. Emily Erbelding responded to me, and her response was, even my mentor who looked at it, because he was CC'd on all the emails, he goes, oh my God, Joe, they are so not open, being open-minded. All they had to do was throw a couple of fellows and a few million at this issue, and they would have had the answer. And the answer was, the flu vaccine had the same flaw. And I didn't just explain it. I wrote 73 pages after Emily Erbelling's response to me, her email. Took me, I had most of it written the first month after her response, but my sister made me whittle it down, because I was angry. I thought my one page would stop the vaccine, even, you know, the possible rollout. I thought Fauci would say, oh, we can't go this way. Fauci screwed up with HIV. He thought vaccines would work. I think he had been in office, what, how long? 35 years? What person has a directorship of the NIH giving out billions of dollars for 30 years plus? Okay. Absolute power corrupts, absolutely. Fauci was corrupt. By the time I got this information to him, I think he just wanted to poo-poo it, brushed it under the rug, and pretend it didn't matter. But I came back with 73 pages that I put a U.S. copyright on, explained every aspect of I even said to Fauci, look, you thought your vaccine worked in your clinical FDA trial. You had great data. I'm not even disagreeing with you. I'm not even calling you a liar. I'm not saying you fabricated anything. I'm not saying the scientists didn't have integrity. I'm saying all true. I will accept all that. But your hypothesis of a neutralizing antibody in the lung airspace can't happen. There's a lung barrier in the way. You know, the blood-brain barrier only accepts molecules that are 500 Daltons or less, give or take. 145,000 Daltons to the lung barrier that keeps our lungs dry? No. So I said, look, you have good data. Let me explain your data for you. What if it was your side effect? Meaning, vaccines give you muscle aches. Why? Because your vaccine tricks your body into making interferon, which gives you muscle aches. And interferon is antiviral in 10,000 papers. No one will ever dispute that. But if you trick your body into making interferon, well, interferon is protective against viruses. Your vaccine worked as a prodrug. And if your vaccine worked as a prodrug, I have a great hypothesis now. Because the J&J vaccine, you stick foreign stuff into your body reacts and produces interferon, you get 50% protection. AstraZeneca, you give two shots. You get more interferon produced. You get a 75% effect. Your mRNA is a very strong adjuvant. It really shakes up your body. Your body produces a lot of interferon. And then it becomes spike antigen. Your body produces interferon again four times because you had a booster. Four times you tricked your body into making interferon, which is antiviral, in a five-month study. Now, that's my alternate hypothesis. You don't have a hypothesis. I do. And science means when my hypothesis is this good and explains the data perfectly, and yours can't explain it because a size matter, not a small size matter, you're off by 140,000 Daltons. So you have a huge size issue. I don't have that issue with my hypothesis, and that my hypothesis explains it perfectly, which means that now you're mandating a vaccine, which is, according to my hypothesis, it's a medicine. You're mandating a medicine, but no one has the illness. In the history of medicine, we don't give medicines to people who don't have the illness, because there's a risk over benefit ratio for everything that we do in medicine. And when somebody doesn't have the illness, there's no benefit to the medicine. Now, that was, I laid it out in 3 minutes to you, but I put it in 73 pages. I put it so well that, all these people who talk about the vaccine now, okay, this is all after the fact. I was explaining this to Fauci September 2020, February 2021 with the U.S. copyright. And that paper trail is what will put him in prison.
And what about what's your assessment of the, as we say, side effects, because there's reports now people just drop, some people have taken the shots, nothing has happened. Others seemingly just collapsing and dying. Guillain-Barre, heart attacks, myocarditis, autoimmune disorders. Any thoughts on that?
Oh, of course. Have you heard of my string mechanism? Okay, you're in for a treat. So, basically, when a person gets a COVID infection, they form antibodies to the top of the spike. But when you're given only spike, you're going to form antibodies at the top and bottom, the side of the spike antigen. So this is what happens. You have a spike antigen. But you've made antibodies. So the antibody will stick to the top of the spike, right? Now, the bottom, something can stick to that. And it has another arm that can stick. And something can stick with that, another spike. And it can grow and grow. Meaning, this is what I call the string mechanism. If you put antibodies and its antigen into solution, they're going to precipitate out. It's going to clump like curdled milk. And if the string becomes big enough, it's going to clog your blood vessels and cause ischemic damage. So this is the silliness. Your first vaccine produced antibodies. The antibodies are to what again? The spike antigen. So will it stick to the spike antigen on a virus? Yes. Will it stick to a spike antigen that's free? Yes. Your booster, you have a lot of antibodies in this patient's blood. You give a booster vaccine, now you introduce spike antigen into the blood. What do you think will happen? They will clump. Now, when I first put this on Twitter 6 months ago, I didn't know about precipitance. Meaning, they have this exact same diagram in their immunology textbooks. And it's a test to determine if you have antibodies or not. In solution, you put antibodies and its antigen, and it precipitates out into precipitants. And the precipitants are visible, meaning at least 100,000 nanometers in size. That's what visibility is. Okay, so capillaries, internal diameters, less than 8,000 nanometers. So you have 100,000 nanometer clump that's going to block capillaries and blood vessels that are 10 times bigger than capillaries. And then you're going to have damage. So all the varied symptoms, what I explain to people is this string mechanism explains how the COVID vaccine is hurting people. Not as a side effect. Not as a side effect. It is the main effect of the vaccine to create clumps of precipitates, which they call precipitants, that will clog blood vessels and cause ischemic damage downstream from that blockage. And, you know, I've had this on NIH director, the chief editor of science, Magdalena Skipper, the chief editor of Journal of Immunology, Eugene Olds. No one has an answer. No one. The American Academy of Pediatrics. I have 1,700 posts. And I call them baby killers even. For 160 days, they have no response. But they're afraid, definitely afraid to block me. How come? I mean, if I call another person a baby killer, they'd be willing to block me. They won't want to block me right away. How come? Because I explained to them, the string mechanism exposes a huge mistake in your vaccine paradigm. I mean, you're actually causing clots as a main mechanism. Because this antibody from your first vaccine, the chances of it binding to a virus is what, 1 in a million? I'll give you 1 in 1,000. I'll give you 1 in 100. But the chance of this antibody binding to your spike antigen from your second booster vaccine is almost guaranteed. That means it is the main effect of your vaccine to cause precipitants, which block blood vessels, which causes damage. So, you know, my recent thing right now on Twitter is, send me anyone who's promoting the vaccine and I will stop them. Why? I'll explain all this. Twitter has, in their terms of service, you agree not to promote violence. Violence is behavior that is intended to damage someone. Well, if you didn't know it was intended, it might not be violence. But the moment I inform you exactly how your vaccine is causing damage to somebody as a main effect, now it's violent behavior. So when you promote vaccines, you're promoting violence. And one of two things happens. I create a paper trail. I keep all the perfect records of it, put it on my Substack, publish everything. Either they stop. If they don't stop, if I can't get Twitter to stop them, class action lawsuit against Twitter for not enforcing their terms of service. Because promoting a vaccine is promoting violence. Now, if I'm wrong, refute it. Explain how I'm wrong. But no one can. This is actually not, this isn't just a COVID vaccine. Half the childhood vaccines have this problem. It's crazy. It's a big problem. It's basically a paradigm shift.
And then just another question then on your thoughts on the vaccine passport, the digital passports, you know, then given your theory, would you then say the purpose of those was to maximize the amount of people getting these shots? Or
to me, that was just a grab for power. Leaders are always corrupt. All leaders are corrupt. It's hard for leaders not to be corrupt. The reason why America is so great is because we limited the power of our leaders by the separation of powers. That helped tremendously. It's not enough. We have to do more to limit the power of leaders, because you give one person a lot of power, they're always going to end up corrupt. It's just human nature. So you have to have a system in place that controls that. So my contention is simple. The leaders are corrupt. They want to make money. Republicans too. I mean, I don't know how many times I emailed, faxed, called Rand Paul's, you know, assistance, and no response, right? So I'm not saying Republicans are perfect. I am saying leaders, by definition, when they have a lot of power, they want to make money. And they love something that can spread, meaning bad news is better than good news. Scary news, they can leverage. The moment this pandemic came around, they're like, okay, we're going to give the mass contract to certain companies. Oh, you guys got that? Now you can put stock options on those companies. You guys are going to make money, right? It's a grab for power. The passports, oh, there are companies that make those passports. It's a grab for power because, see, leaders, most of us don't know the future. Science can predict the future. Leaders can make the future. They can make certain things happen. When you know what the future holds, you can easily leverage it and find a way to make money off of that. You can make a bet on anything. But imagine if you're a leader and you know which company is going to get the masks contract, right? All the PPE contracts. Once you know, you're going to make money.
And speaking of power,
people have a lot of conspiracy theories. I'm like, follow the money. It hasn't changed.
And speaking of power grabs, you know, there's a lot of talk about the World Health Organization and their pandemic treaty and international health regulations, how they want to usurp power from nation states and concentrate it at the supranational level. And any thought on that?
Well, when all this comes out, this is the truth. When all this comes out, it'll expose the stupidity of all the leaders. All that will die. All that will go away. Why? Because they had to have been correct about all this. But when they were wrong about all this in such a big way, they're not going to have momentum. People aren't going to listen to them. But of course, this has to hit the public. And so the question is, the anti-vax leaders, Malone, McCullough, Corey, Nass, Asim, Bhattacharya, JJ, everyone you could possibly imagine that you know, why are they silent on this? That's the big question. Because the anti-vaxxers, all right, look, I'm an anti-vaxxer. I was since the end of 2020. My children are 20, 21. They were vaccinated when they were little for everything. But when I figured all this out, I was an out anti-vaxxer, right? And my children had to go through high school thinking that I was an anti-vaxxer physician dad. In the real science world, how many scientists are there? Hundreds of millions. In the anti-vax world, how many scientists do you know? 50? How many well-known ones? 20? 30? Less than that, right? Steve Kirsch says J.J. Cooey is one of the top scientists. In the real science world, they're nothing. They are nothing. Okay, the anti-vaxxers have the most incredible common sense, but they don't have leaders to choose from because true scientists didn't want to be an anti-vaxxer. So who did they get? They got the scientists that weren't really making it in their fields, and they wanted some quick fame, so they came over to the anti-vax side. Did they come here with science? Put all the science that Malone, McCullough, everyone, put all the science together. I'm not talking about data. They have collected a lot of patient data. Science is not just data collection. Put all the science that they come up with. They don't have even 1% of what I did. They're not scientists. And that's why this isn't taking off. It isn't taking off because the anti-vaxxers, the leaders, they want this to continue. They like this. I think they want this to continue. Of course, I didn't get into their head, but I think they want this to continue. I think they want the vaccine injured. I think they want to be able to treat these people. I think they love the whole drama. I just want it over. And from the beginning, I didn't get on Twitter. I did all the proper things. I reached out to all the NIH, CDC, FDA, all the proper channels. I worked in the dark for 2.5 years. I first got on Twitter September 2022 just because I had no other outlet, no way to get my information out. I couldn't even advertise and spend $50,000 with the Orange County Register because the campaign against disinformation, they were spooked that they would get canceled. So I had no outlet. That's the only reason why I came. But I came with science. What did they come with? What did Simone Gould come with? Oh, her dislike for the vaccine. That's all they had. They didn't have science.
Have you felt any repercussions at all, whether like business, livelihood, or otherwise? Are you afraid of speaking out?
The California Medical Board, I'm still doing LASIK surgery. I have a practice. The California Medical Board got all my information almost 3 years ago. They didn't call it misinformation back then. Actually, one of the board members was an ophthalmologist. I personally spoke with him, called him up at his office, and he goes, okay, I'll try to help you. And he emailed me that. So I'm completely protected. I call the California Medical Board the misinformation. I say that I'm going to put them on notice for future murder charges. The California Medical Board, their chief legal counsel. I'm not afraid of them. I'm not afraid because I sent all my information to them as I was doing everything. And they didn't call it misinformation then. They can't suddenly call it now. And I have responses from them. So what? Did I ever worry about not getting my license again? No, never. Because there, I told the past president, I said, I'm going to make sure that you lose your job as a president of our medical board because you're an attorney. You're not even a physician. If you were a physician, you could understand what I was saying. You would have sent my information to all the California physicians, and they would have been able to give proper informed consent, and this would have been over. But you're a lawyer, and you're a very liberal lawyer who knows nothing. You're just going to stick to your party. You're not going to stick to the truth or science. I'm not afraid of them. Why would I be afraid of them?
I
did the proper thing. I'm not like this person who's going to give fake vaccines to help people. I'm not going to do that because it's just going to come back and get me. Why would I do that? I'm going to protect myself properly as I go. I'm going to try to do the right thing. Then how can I be held accountable? For what? For trying to do the right thing, right?
And just to go back,
I lost a lot of friends, though. A lot of Democrat friends. Don't like them either. They don't like me. I don't like them. Well, they're wrong. And the Democrat way of thinking is a problem.
Yeah. And just to go back to what you were saying earlier, why do you think all countries participated? Was it, you know, just to make money again? And then this, they keep talking about how this is going to happen again, like disease X, they're, you know, Alaska pox, freak out, you know, this
it's
and that.
Just another way to control people. Leaders want more and more control. You give leaders control, they want more and more. And as they get more and more control, they find better and better ways to make money off of it. That's, to me, you know, see, there was a, okay, the CCP. I say Trump saved the world. The reason why I say Trump saved the world is because the CCP had this Belt and Road Initiative. They had these trade routes, right? They were buying up ports everywhere and making all these complex arrangements for all these countries. Because once everything was set in place, what they were going to do was this. And Australia was a perfect real example of what they did. Australia, you know, they felt like, hey, you know, we might need an independent investigation to Wuhan. And Xi Jinping got pissed off. He goes, no trade for you. Weaponizing trade. And so Australia couldn't sell their barley, coal. I mean, China was using their main buyer of coal. And they put a 30% tariff on it. Okay. Who did that hurt? It hurt Australia. Because they couldn't sell wine, barley, coal. Their economy was really bad for a while. But it also taught every other country in Southeast Asia, oh, China, yeah, you're a big guy. You're big. And you're a big bully right now. You're not following the rule of law. What you want to do is just control the world. And if once you had this Belt Road Initiative all set up, if some little country argued with you on anything, mentioned Uyghurs or how you shouldn't take their organs and use it for your you know, CCP members and get free organs, whatever you want to do, no one can say a word. And if you do say something negative about us, we just ban trade with you and your nation dies. Okay, so, but the moment they did that to Australia, they outed themselves. Who likes a bully? No one. So there isn't a country, Vietnam is communist. They hate CCP. How's that? Because China wants to rule the world. And everyone saw how the CCP was behaving when they did have power. Now they lost it. But now, in the process of losing it, they left a void because they thought they were going to have all this power. The Democrats here were kissing up to them. Everyone in the world was kissing up. Remember Merkel? Isn't she very liberal? And isn't she supposed to protect the Uyghurs and all the injustice that's happening in China? Did she ever mention a word? No, because they needed the trade with China, right? And so that's how China was going to own the world, the CCP. All came crashing down because of Trump. Trump saved the world from an evil CCP that would have been just as bad as the Nazis in my mind. So now that we have this situation, there's a void. They still want to grab power. They're just trying to figure out, okay, so the CCP, but we still need to try to grab power. That's all they're doing. They thought they were going to grab power with the CCP and be in bed with the CCP, but the CCP is done. They're gone. They're yesterday's news. And this is the biggest story of our time that the average person in America doesn't know about. This China is will never come back.
You don't think so? I mean, there are... when you mention this void, it seems like we're now what I like to call this 100-year storm, these great power politics, talk about Taiwan, and then what's happening in America. You know, they say there's talk of second civil war. This election is, you know, either make or break. You know, any further thoughts on where we could go from here? You know, what if Biden wins again?
If Biden wins again, then I'm not good at predicting what will happen because there are a lot of people on the Republican side that I don't talk to people about this because, you know, I'm not a violent person and I don't bear arms. At some point, people will think that they have to fight for justice and freedom and liberty. And if the elections are rigged, I think the last election was rigged. I completely believe that. But am I allowed my belief or not? I'm not supposed to promote violence, but something that already happened, can I say what I think happened? It's my opinion that the election was completely rigged. But can I say anything to promote violence in the future? I don't want to. I don't want to have anything to do with that. I mean, my fight is with this vaccine to expose the stupidity of it all. And, you know, there's a whole group of people that think that, and they might be right, that a group of people on Earth wants to control the world and control all the people. And it's possible that they're correct. But what I always say to that is, you don't understand children. They're not going to do what their parents want. And it's never going to last more than a generation. Because, you know, I mean, to build a big company on the up and up, openly, transparently, get stockholders involved and have all your books audited by Ernst & Young and do the marketing legitimately and grow a company, that's so difficult. But you're talking about this group of people that do everything in secret and still own the whole world. I mean, it's possible. But their children aren't going to behave like their parents want them to do. They're not going to be the evil genius that wants to control the world. And it just can't. I don't think it can carry on that easily. Of course, if they really are trying to do that, we should stop it. Because this is what life is about. Life is about trying to understand what is good for people in the future. And are you on the good side? Are you on the help? Are humanity grow into the future and live happy lives? Or are you on another side? It's always that question over and over again in any kind of discussion you want to have, which is why you really can't keep science out of politics. Because the science of vaccines, it becomes politics. It always goes out to politics, right? So to me, it's always the leader issue. You can't give leaders too much power. And when they have too much power, they try to grab more and more power, like the, you know, vaccine passports, etc. You just can't give them power. You got to limit their power. And that holds true for the Republicans too. They just got to limit people's power, because people are, our DNA, we're liars. We are designed to deceive. That is an essence of what a biological organism is. We are here to lie. So the real truth is, how do we help the next generation? Not with lies. We help the next generation the most with truth. And leaders don't have that. Look at the anti-vax leaders on our side. None of them have it. They're all working for themselves too. Like JJ Cooey, he interviewed me. I got 270,000 views on this. And he said, oh, he was shocked. And then later he says, oh, it's overly simplistic. Why? Because he's attached himself to the RFK group. And RFK Jr. got a lot of my information August 2022. My emails, everything. He didn't use it to take down the vaccine. Oh, why not? Because he wants to control how he gets the power. He doesn't want to hurt Big Pharma that way. It's never what you think. The people that you think are on this side aren't even on this side. Everyone's out for themselves.
And I guess in closing, you know, I always ask, what can we do? Are you optimistic about the future? Do you think justice will win in the end? You know, final thoughts or anything else that you think is important to get across?
So fasting is a cure for COVID. So the RNase enzyme, which destroys the viral RNA, no one else on Earth, 7 billion people, no one even has a theory on how we healed from COVID in 2020. When there were no COVID-19 antibodies. No one even has a theory. I say, when the COVID virus infected all my lung cells in the spring of 2020, and that the viral RNA is in all my cells, and I lived. How? RNase. Then how do you activate that more? turns out that when you're fasting, it's like a wood stove. Too much fuel, less oxygen. Less fuel, more oxygen. When you're not eating and there's less glucose, there's more reactive oxygen species in your cells. The ribonuclease enzyme is like a pit bull. It destroys all RNA, even ours. The inhibitor is attached to it that prevents it from working. This inhibitor comes off when you're fasting. So when you're 85 and you get COVID or the flu, you won't even worry. You just won't eat for 3 days, water fast. Do not eat for 3 days and you will not die. So yeah, on a positive note, fasting is it. On a very negative note, the Dems are at their philosophical end. Because humans, we're capable. We don't need as much help as they think we do. Their whole premise in life, their whole philosophy from the very beginning was help people. Now, whether they really do or not, sometimes they just pretend. But people don't need as much help as they think they need. We didn't need the vaccine. We didn't need their help. We were doing fine. Oh, they say, well, the elderly died. The vaccine didn't stop it. What would have stopped the elderly from dying is fasting. And did they want that truth? No, because they don't really care to help people. They just want to pretend that they're helping. If they really want to help people, they would have taken my information, like Mayor Garcetti. I'm explaining to him, you have a mandate. People are losing their jobs. I'm explaining to you the antibody can't even get in the lung. Do you really want to help people? If you really want to help people, then help them. Because the antibody's not getting in the lung. It's not helping anyone. But they don't really want to help. They just want. That's just their spiel. They don't even do it. But truly, the reason why we have this help gene, this behavioral instinct gene complex within us, we're not supposed to help adults that much. Adults are supposed to be capable on their own. We're supposed to help children grow. That's about the only real reason why we have this help gene, behavioral complex gene within us. Not to help adults. If adults need a lot of help, they're a broken adult. But that's what the Dems, see, that's why I say Dems are at their philosophical end. They are at their philosophical end because they were wrong and they corrupted the very idea of help that is ingrained within us. We're not supposed to help broken adults who can't work. They're going to be lazy forever. We're supposed to help children grow up to be capable adults.
All right. It's been a fascinating hour. You know, any final thought, and then let us know where we can find you. I've got your link to Twitter. That's the only place I've found you. You know, any final thought on where can we go to?
So I have a website, lungvirus.com. And my Substack is Joseph Y. Lee, MD. And I have I got banned off Twitter. Last year, I had 50,000 followers in like 4 months. And they canceled me because I was talking about RFK. And when I got this spring, I came back with an old account I had never used. So Twitter, I suspect that their censors are going to start canceling people before the election. So I might be one of those. Substack is very useful.
Do you think RFK Jr. Has a chance to be the president?
No, zero. But what he does have is this. Because, see, the vaccine industry is $30 billion a year, give or take $5 billion. And I'm talking about all childhood vaccines here. And so the problem with RFK is this vaccine industry is not going to just die. They're going to pay somebody off. Who are they going to pay off? I think they're going to pay off people like RFK. I think they're going to donate to them. And then all that money is going to trickle down to all. I think that's why there's silence on this string mechanism, which destroys not just the COVID vaccine. Every future mRNA vaccine, half the childhood vaccines, because no one can refute it. Like, oh yeah, you put antibodies and antigen together, they're going to clump. It's so basic that no one can refute it. But so the vaccine industry doesn't want to die, but they can't fight this on the up and up. So they're going to fight darkly. And I think they're going to use RFK to do it.
But hasn't RFK been fighting against the vaccines particularly? Or
Okay, so then he gets my information in an email. I send it my 73 pages explaining everything to Fauci, why the vaccine can never work. The antibody can't even get into the lung. 73 pages with a U.S. copyright dated back to February 2021. I sent it to RFK's attorney after talking to him for 3 minutes. RFK's attorney thinks it's important enough to send it to RFK. RFK is excited, sends it to his 30 dozen, McCullough, Malone, Nass, Corey, everyone. I didn't even know all these people. Then he buries the story. Oh, why did he do that? That's not for me to answer. I can speculate. He wants credit for taking down the vaccine. He doesn't really want to take down the vaccine unless he gets credit for it. That's my speculation. I think it's very reasonable.
All right, Dr. Joe Lee, the links to all your everywhere people can find you, Substack, Twitter, X, your website will be in the description. And thank you for being on Geopolitics and Empire.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this Geopolitics and Empire podcast. The website is geopoliticsandempire.com, and I encourage you to sign up for the free email list that goes out with each podcast and every weekend with a collection of news headlines. The newsletter and website are our last lines of defense. We're being censored and deplatformed. It's nearly impossible to find Geopolitics and Empire on the Google search engine. We've been blacklisted. YouTube frequently takes down our videos with strikes. Facebook restricts our page. Reddit and Twitter take down posts. And after the Associated Press mentioned Geopolitics and Empire in a 2021 article co-written with NATO, our Patreon account was terminated. Vimeo also terminated our pro account. The best free way to help Geopolitics and Empire is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or elsewhere and subscribe to all of our media channels. You can find the video broadcast now on 5 platforms: Odyssey, Rockfin, Rumble, BitChute, and Brighteon. You can find the audio broadcast on the podcast ecosystem: SoundCloud, Apple, Spotify, and so on. My current favorite social media channels are Twitter and Telegram, but you can also find us on Gab, MeWe, Minds, Float, VK, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Finally, Geopolitics and Empire is in dire need of funding to continue. You can leave a donation, purchase a consultation with the host, or become a member to receive additional benefits. We also produce a weekly broadcast called Dissident Thinker for members and Rockfin subscribers only. We will continue to fight the good fight come hell or high water. Thank you for listening.